the Son of the Lord.
Amen.
Our voice, the Son of the Lord.
Amen.
Our voice, the Son of the Lord.
Amen.
So a reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, and the chapter about the cause of all causes. We're on text 33. Tada samhatya chanyam yam. Bhagavat chakti choditaha. Sadasattvam upadaya. Tobayam sasrijur hiyadha. Tada samhatya chanyanyam. Bhagavat chakti choditaha. Sadasattvam upadhaya. Tobayam sasrijur hiyadha. Tada, all those, samhatya, being assembled, cha also, anyonyam, one another, bhagavat, by the personality of Godhead, shakti, energy, choditaha, being applied, sat asattvam, primarily and secondarily, upadaya, accepting, cha also, upayam, both, sasruju, came into existence, he, certainly, adhaha, this universe. Translation, verse of study. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Thus, when all these became assembled by force of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this universe certainly came into being by accepting both the primary and secondary causes of creation. Purport. In this verse, it is clearly mentioned that the Supreme Personality of Godhead exerts his different energies in the creation. It is not that he himself is transformed into material creations. He expands himself by his different energies as well as by his plenary portions. In a corner of the spiritual sky of the Brahma Jyoti, a spiritual cloud sometimes appears, and the covered portion is called the Mahatattva. The Lord then, by his plenary portion as Mahavishnu, lies down within the water of the Mahatattva, and the water is called the Kalja Ocean, Karana Jal. While Mahavishnu sleeps within the causal ocean, innumerable universes are generated along with his breathing. These universes are floating, and they're scattered all over the causal ocean. They stay only during the breathing period of Mahavishnu. In each and every universal globe, the same Mahavishnu enters again as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and lies there on a serpent-like Shesha incarnation. From his navel sprouts a lotus stem, and on the lotus, Brahma, the Lord of the universe, is born. Brahma creates all forms of living beings of different shapes and terms of different desires within the universe. He also creates the sun, moon, and other demigods. Therefore, the chief engineer of the material creation is the Lord himself, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.10. It is he only who directs the material nature to produce all sorts of moving and non-moving creations. There are two modes of material creation, the creation of collective universes, as stated above, done by Mahavishnu, and the creation of a single universe. Both are done by the Lord, and thus a universal shape, as we can see, takes place. I'll try to keep it as less technical as I possibly can, since I don't understand so much about it. But here are some of the secrets of this creation of the universe. If I was to go down to, let's say, Publix or Hitchcock's and go along in the parking lot and ask somebody how this all come about, they wouldn't have a clue. Most people don't have a clue what caused this whole thing, when it came into being, how it's going to be destroyed. They really don't have a clue. But here we're so lucky that the mystery is solved by the Bhagavatam. Here we're getting some details about the creation and about how Krishna, by his will, here it's described, it's actually by a force, that he exerts himself into these different expansions and he gives them the ability to create. And thus we have all the universes being created from Mahavishnu and also by Garbhadaksha Vishnu and Lord Brahma. It's a pretty remarkable plan that Krishna conjured up. I don't think any other engineer on the planet or in the universe could think of such a plan. Definitely a unique system that he has arranged. I mean, sometimes if you ask a religionist how did it all cause, what was all caused, they might say, I think it describes in the Bible it was the Word. But who caused? Who said the word? And who is this person? Then they kind of lose track and they don't really understand. So we are very fortunate that we have this all cleared for us by the Bhagavatam. So this verse, if you ask me, is one of the pieces of humble pie that we can digest, that the Bhagavatam allows us to get rid of some of our false ego thinking that we're so great and so we're so significant, we're so wonderful, and we're, you know, what would the creation be without us? So this is a little humble pie that we can eat when you think of how many billions and billions of living entities there are in this universe. Pretty remarkable. I know sometimes when I travel, I sit in the airport and I look around me and I see, you know, thousands of people that I don't know, people that are from all over the planet, and at the same time, they are thinking that they have their own little universe. They're all sitting there in their seats, and they've got their own little universe. All the things that going on in their life is so important. But really, is it so important? It's so temporary. And how long have we been migrating from one planet to another again and again? So we really do have our heads in the clouds, literally, thinking that we are such an important thing. And even more important than that is that Krishna is able to keep track of all these different living entities from all over the world. He knows, because they're all his loving part and parcel. He has a relationship with them. But unfortunately, their business isn't in reestablishing that relationship. It's in establishing all these temporary relationships within this material lifetime. But we're here only for a little teeny eye blink, and then we're gone, going here and there and trying to find some pleasure, some identity within this material universe, which is a very foreign place for us. It's very dark, and it's very bewildering. So it's healthy to realize how small we are, but at the same time, we shouldn't get depressed about it. It's described in the Bhagavad Gita that the soul is amazing. Some hear of him as amazing, some think of him as amazing, some understand that the soul is amazing, but they really don't understand how. But we can see the importance of that soul, how wonderful and powerful it can be. Look at this soul, Srila Prabhupada, what he's done to this universe, to this material planet. He's totally changed it. So this soul is very, very powerful. So we should be satisfied that we have the opportunity to understand who we really are, that we are this soul. And then we discover that actually my real consciousness, my real identity is that I'm simply a servant of the servant of the servant of the greatest master, the cause of all causes, that I get to actually bow my head on the floor at least 3 times a day or more and be grateful and appreciate that I am a servant of this greatest personality. So we can see that everyone here is very happy in that situation. It's not that it's a drag being a servant. It's actually, we're here today because we're happy being a servant. And we don't go away. We don't go away and serve material energy anymore. We're happy serving him. And then in the beginning, we begin to get that little taste, that little reciprocation that he allows us to have from his internal potency. And we get that taste through his representative, the guru. We get that taste by associating with the nice servants of the guru, of the different Vaishnavas. And through our service, we get a taste. Because this is all his internal potency. So we really begin to identify that, yes, this is my position. And I'm feeling comfortable in it. I'm feeling more comfortable the more dependent I become also. And become more and more proud that I'm able to wear tilak and to represent his representative, Srila Prabhupada. So this purport is describing these different expansions, which are the different energies of the Supreme Person. So in India, I went down to Sri Rangam one time, and actually Vishnu is very popular in South India, especially Mahavishnu. In Sri Rangam, they have I think it's about 20 feet long, about as long as this altar. This is 22 inches, this front of the altar. He's about this long, and the pujaris will take you in, and it's always dark in those South Indian temples. He takes a candle and walks you along, so you can start at his lotus feet and go all the way up to his head, and you can see Mahavishnu, and thousands of pilgrims come every day to have the darshan of Mahavishnu. And you can see how great he must have been, just lying in that causal ocean with all these bubbles of universes coming out of him. And also, I've been to Thailand, and in the airport, there's Mahavishnu in the airport. Vishnu is there in the airport. And then Lord Brahma's downtown. And if you go to Bali, there's the whole Mahabharata is downtown, Bhima and everybody. And then even in, only the old people will know this, but even Mahavishnu is popular on the Jimi Hendrix album cover, right? There's Mahavishnu. And so the Vishnu has become very popular. It's in different expansions of Krishna. Even Narada Muni, what does he chant? Narayan, 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 right? Which is also another form of the Lord. But there's a nice story in the Bhagavatam about the gopis, that they're searching for Krishna in the forest of Vrindavan, and they're inquiring from the trees and the different plants. Oh, where's my Krishna? I can't find him anywhere. And all of a sudden, they come across Lord Narayan standing there. And they go up to Lord Narayan and say, have you seen Krishna anywhere? And then, that's Krishna. But and he's just standing there, well? And they go, no. Krishna, you know Krishna. And so Krishna has many, many different forms. But of course, we are given this most beautiful form of Radha Shyam to worship and to enjoy. That's from the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya, somehow or other, has found us as needing this to learn about this worship of Radha Krishna, which is the highest worship. And it's such intimate pastime of Radha Shyam, Krishna Balaram. So we're very fortunate to be able to take part, and as Mukhya said, to be so close to them and to enjoy them. Here it is describing the Lord Krishna as the chief engineer. Whenever I meet people from India, I usually ask them what kind of engineer they are. What kind of engineer are you? There's how many engineers? There's the chemical engineer, electrical engineer, mechanical engineer, construction engineer. There's so many different engineers, but Krishna is the supreme engineer. He runs the whole show. And so we understand that we should respect him in this position also as the cause of all causes. And one who is telling the Vishnus, Mahavishnu, that, okay, there's a need now for all my renegade lost devotees to go get some training, to get their attitude corrected. So therefore, we need to make a facility, a correctional institution for all these renegade fallen souls. So the little cloud appears, a little cloud in the cosmic creation appears, and Krishna sends Mahavishnu to go down, lay down, and what does he do? He goes, takes a nap. He sleeps. And bubbles come out of universes, millions of universes come out of the pores of the skin. Now, when we go to sleep, first of all, Prabhupada said sleep is death. We're pretty much dead. And besides that, what comes out, Prabhupada said, described it as a urine-like substance comes out of our pores. That's why the first thing you do in the morning, you take a bath, because it's disgusting. That's why you should clean your sheets and your pillows and everything regularly. Because it's nasty. Our bodies are nasty. But Mahavishnu's just sleeping there, and universes come out. And then within each universe, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, another Vishnu form, enters, and from his lotus navel comes a lotus flower, a beautiful lotus flower. And within that lotus flower, Lord Brahma is there. So this is the first and second parts of the creation. It's in Lord Brahma, he has to figure out how I'm going to facilitate bodies for each of these persons that has different desires. So it's a real challenge to make costumes for all these different desires. So he ends up custom fits all these different funny looking forms, cockroach bodies, spider bodies, all these different bodies actually they're just uniforms for our prison life here. And we can change our uniforms at will according to our desires. And so then we come here and we roam around this planet thinking that I'm the Queen of England for some time. Or I roam around thinking that I'm the CEO of Amazon, or that I'm the greatest soccer player in Brazil or India, whichever you prefer. Or I'm a teacher, I'm a doctor, I'm a cockroach, I'm a dog, chief dog on the block. And we roam around thinking that we're such, a great contribution to this planet. And the most amazing thing, after doing all this creation, you can reverse the cycle. You can, from cold to heat, right? Creation and then destruction. Krishna at his will, he engages Lord Shiva. and so many in different incarnations, Kalki, to come and finish off everybody, and Mahavishnu takes a rest and breathes in and breathes out again, and this is going on and on and on, reverse cycle. So Krishna is pretty amazing what he can do. But Krishna just doesn't leave us here in the prison house alone. He gives us some counseling help and speaks Bhagavad Gita, sends a counselor, the greatest Srila Prabhupada, to come tell us how to revive that nice, the service attitude that we lost. It's so important to hear about bhakti, of what real loving service attitude is. So we should realize that it's very important to take part in this bhakti program. Now, Vegavati, she said in one of her classes recently that that we're kind of playing house here, that we're thinking we're doing so many different things, and just like the mother will say, you know, come in the kitchen and cook, and you take all kinds of weird things, and you pretend like it's food. But I actually had a really nice realization when we were cooking on Radhastami. I think it was Ruchira and I and somebody else. We were in the kitchen, and we were trying to figure out what preparations to make for Radhastami, and I was very upset because they weren't real traditional preparations that we could figure out how to make in such big quantity, because it's to make rasgul and rasmalai and to make 2,000, 3,000 of it. It's just like, it's really difficult these days. You just don't realize. But I was thinking that actually we're pretending like we're cooking for Radharani. Cooking for Radharani, the greatest cook. And we felt pretty ridiculous. You know, here we are fiddling around with what little things we have, trying to figure out preparations to offer to the greatest devotee of all, Radharani, who's the greatest cook. So it was definitely a realization that Krishna, and I hope you accept this, because there's no qualification whatsoever, just our humble attempt to try to, you know, to feed all the devotees. So Krishna actually does. He looks for the devotion and the good intention of the devotees, the struggling devotees that are trying to do something to please them. There's always that nice description of the yogi. It was a nectar devotion of the yogi who's meditating on making sweet rice. He's just a babaji. He doesn't have any facility to really cook sweet rice, so he just meditates on it. But he's really thinking about making a really nice bunch of sweet rice, you know, nice and creamy, and the rice isn't too soft, it isn't too hard. And then he says, well, I got to offer this, but it's just too hot. So I got to put in I got to get it cooled off. And to make sure that it was all right, he stuck his finger in it, and it was too hot, and he burned his finger. And of course, Lord Narayan Vishnu was sitting there with his consort, and he just starts laughing because he actually is conscious that this person has such good intentions. And look, he has such concentration that is actually that meditation came to life. And so he laughs, and his consort says, what are you laughing about? And he says, he tells what's happened. He says he sent his carrier to go bring back that devotee to him. So Krishna is looking at the intention. So this other routine business of creation, he gets the Vishnus to take care of that. And then he has his position as a Paramatma, where he enters it actually into the heart of every living entity to further give us direction, just to decipher what the desires, the real desires of that soul are. So he doesn't leave us alone. He's with us. He's promoting the best way he can for us to come back to him. So this other business of creation, that's one thing. But the Bhagavatam reveals that his real activities, his most pleasurable activities are actually to serve his devotees. He sees these devotees trying to serve him, and he wants to try to repay them. Here he is in the cause of all causes, and he's trying to repay his devotees. And as far as the greatest devotees, he can't repay them. He says, you're just going to have to be pleased with your service because I can't repay you. because their devotion is so intense. The pure devotees are so fixed and have such unconditional love and so surrendered that they're extremely rare to find such devotees. And the Bhagavad Gita also declares that Krishna says, I think in the 12th chapter, he says, the most dear, and he says, actually the most dear to me are those devotees that are fully surrendered and not wanting anything in return. So this is the intimate pastimes that Krishna relishes the most. The other pastimes of creation, of making the prison houses, he delegates to other expansions, but it's by his will and his force. And just to think that we're here in the prison house and we're missing out on all these wonderful things that are going on in the spiritual world. Here we are in this little dark corner of the universe, and three-fourths of everybody else is enjoying their relationship. So it's so important that we take up this process a little enthusiastically this lifetime. Some of us, Prabhupada said that especially some of these young devotees that have been born in the movement, they've done this in other pastimes. And maybe they've just slipped somewhere along the line, or they just haven't gotten the whole thing. So it's so important that we really put it all out, give all of our energy, all of our concentration, especially into our sadhana, chanting the holy names, getting that wonderful association, direct association of the Lord with the holy name. And also keeping our soul very alive and conscious by kirtan and bhajan and by preaching. This is also increases our enthusiasm. And then, of course, we have to keep our hearts very clean. And that's by good association, being very select in who we want to be around and rejecting those things that cause us to fall away. So this is our duty. As disciples of Srila Prabhupada, and it's our duty as part of Krishna. He doesn't want to have to keep making these prison houses. He wants us all back home. So it's our duty to continue in our endeavor to please him. I think it was Ghanashyam Prabhu's class a few days ago. He was describing how we are part of Krishna, and we have some of the same qualities, and we actually have that propensity too to create. And you can see that we're all very creative personalities. We're all these amazing souls that can create so many wonderful things around us. Everything you see, all the buildings and the roads and the technology and all the beautiful things on the altar and everything. But if you think about it, every time we create something, we create a mess. We're actually mess makers. Whenever I make anything, I make a mess. You cook, you make a mess on the floor. You clean the floor, and then you have a messy rag, and then you have the dirt, or you get messy doing something, and then you go and you take a shower, and then you got the mess in the tub. And it's just like constant mess. So we're definitely not the supreme cause of all causes. We're the cause of a big mess. Look at what technology has done. We're the cause of it now destroying this whole planet and climate change. We're very potent mess makers. We've done it big time. So better than to create a big mess, we should create wonderful things that we can give back to Krishna and that he accepts. And then the non-devotees, they're creating their karma of all things. Karma, they're creating a bondage here to get more entangled and more entangled. So this lifetime we have an opportunity to create our deliverance by learning how to serve Krishna in whatever way we possibly can, and giving credit to the creator and the cause of our being able to create anything or to even make any advancement goes back to Krishna. So best that we use this power and this creative power to create more devotion and more sincerity and more enthusiasm to become Krishna conscious and make others Krishna conscious. there's so much opportunity to create ways like this festival. Whoever created that idea is so nice. It's bringing more people into close to Krishna consciousness to do service to Krishna. So to become creative in ways of attracting more people to Krishna consciousness, that's the best way to use this propensity. And then the Lord will be very pleased, and we will be very thankful and grateful and be able to express our gratitude to Krishna. And realize that that we are also very thankful that we're able to come here and serve the devotees and serve the deities so nicely with our creative abilities. And you can see in this backdrop that the Lord enjoys these pastimes of the Lord with music. He's got all his mridangas and tablas, and he's got his veenas, completely surrounded by his loving brother and expansions. So this is Krishna's real business. Although we're able to relish also this creation, realizing how great our master is. So maybe someone has some questions or has some contribution. Yes, sir.
All right, Krishna, thank you. I just had two things. I was going to share one thing about my first experience with, this was like in early 1970s, I got a Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the compilation, you know, of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And at that point, I was still kind of like dabbling in substances and stuff, not very much, but more socially. But I remember, you know, reading that about the three Vishnus, and you know, we were talking about creativity, you know, and so somewhere or other I can visualize a lot of things. So I started visualizing that, and I thought, wow, this is really amazing, you know. And every time I hear it, I just get so impressed, you know. And then the other thing is, when you're reading the description there, I know about the Garbhodakshay Vishnu and each little universe filling up halfway with water and that part, but I was always under the impression that when the universes came out of the pores of Mahavishnu, Karanadakshaya Vishnu, that they were floating in the air rather than in an ocean. But I guess the air could be an ocean, right?
It describes in the ocean. Yeah.
It describes an ocean, but yeah. Could it be actually? I mean, sometimes you refer to the air as an ocean, but...
Well, usually you see bubbles in water. You don't see bubbles so much in air.
Well, I do. You know, my daughter's got one of those little things where you... Anyway, it would be interesting to, you know, because... Anyway, I was just wondered if you had any information on that.
I don't have much information. It says causal ocean here.
Okay.
When you were mentioning you were in the airport and you were looking at people and they were all wrapped up in their own little universe, it occurred to me, my God, you know, their little universe is all there on their cell phone.
Yeah.
Every connection and contact and exposure to what they choose, that's their universe right in that little cell phone.
And it's totally virtual.
That's amazing.
Totally virtual.
How life is.
Can all be busted in one hurricane. Finished.
In the prayer part, it says that in the spiritual sky that sometimes a spiritual cloud appears. Seems kind of random. I was just wondering if you could.
I don't know. I'm trying to picture it. That's what it says. That's what it says. It doesn't give a lot of. I don't know any of the details of where the cloud came from, but maybe our scientist knows. It was probably some dark cloud that.
About cooking for Srimati Radharani. We were discussing the other day about where this this plum chutney, they say, this very. Do you know anything about the origins in this kind of that, or is that a traditional?
As far as I can remember, as far back as I can go, there was even as far as 1970, 71, there was plum chutney.
Radha Red.
Radha Red, yeah. My husband got in a whole argument about the name with Frida Dhanamaraj. Yeah, so before that, I don't know where it came from, but it was there that far ago. And we were lamenting that we couldn't make it in quantity here because plums are so expensive and hard to get hold of. And it's a strange, because if you use a purple plum or a red plum, it makes a whole difference what color it ends up to be. The inside has to be red. Sometimes the purple plums are white inside, so you have to get a red plum that's red inside, and then it turns red. Side note.
On the cloud thing, I mean, I didn't. That's endless, the discussion. But I mean, you know, we understand material energy sometimes manifests and unmanifests. It expands and withdraws. So I don't know if that has some correspondence.
So why not a cloud?
Huh? Well, it's random from our perspective, but it may appear random from our perspective.
I guess
that's
when there's enough renegade, people that goes poof, there's a cloud.
Well, you know, it's all perspective as well. I mean, it manifests in we have plenty of descriptions of, you know, Vishnu exhales, it manifests and unmanifests. So there's different ways to describe it, you know. It's not like there's one sound bite and that encompasses the whole phenomenon.
Yeah, our Lord can do whatever he likes, however he likes. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki jai.